everyone, welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Chris.
And welcome back. It's been about 2 months since we've had an episode. Schedules have been crazy. We just wrapped up the holidays here. But we're finally going to get back to, hopefully, a constant monthly schedule. 2022 is going to bring some good stuff for us. Some nice announcements also coming from the team. And actual paper events. But before we get into any of that, Chris, man, how have you been? What have you been up to?
I've been pretty good. I just got back from a recent rotation to Europe, and I am excited to sit down and start playing some Paper Magic again. I found out some of the guys I work with, they play some other card games as well, and I had actually had the ability to sit down and play in a competitive environment before I left to go over there to Europe, and I realized I really missed it and can't wait to get back to it.
Yeah, man. Now, like, finally being able to sit down and play Paper Magic again, it hits. It's good.
Yeah.
But definitely look forward to hearing that. And be sure to tell your buddies about the Snapcast in case they get bored and want to hear some sweet modern news.
Oh, I'll be wearing, you know, some of the shirts and stuff. And
excellent.
The life counter pads, passing them out like I always do.
Excellent, excellent. We got to get a new order of those. But what about you, Sean, man? How have you been?
Realistically, super busy. I've built 3 new modern decks with another one in the works and haven't played since the Invitational with deck that I don't even own.
Yeah, that's right. You ran Living End, correct?
I did. It was like a last minute call kind of thing. Since Modern Horizons 2 came out, it was kind of a powerhouse with Shardless Agent, and playing blue now gives us a couple different cyclers and, most importantly, Force of Negation and some of the free elementals compared to the old Living End, which was Jund with Simeon Spirit Guide and just Violent Outburst. And God, I can't remember the sorcery speed one that required a creature to be out. That would be a complete whiff against control decks.
What Ardent Plea was it?
No, Ardent Plea is the blue-white one. I want to say it's begins with a D, I think. Gosh, I can't remember, but it's very much unplayable nowadays. I played Living End way back then, a couple FNMs, 7080s. Demonic Dread, that one, yeah.
I got it right next to me.
I ran back when Jack's Game Center was around, they would run 60 to 70-person FNMs, and I piloted that Living End to a couple top 8s there, so that was pretty sick.
Nice.
So seeing it come back, I was like, you know what? My options were play blue-white control, which I enjoy that archetype the most. However, skill-wise, I'm not quite there to take it to an event like an Invitational. Hammer Time, I played a few leagues with and had some decent success, and I was very close to locking in on it. Some Asmo build that I could brew up, since Asmo is probably my favorite card out of Modern Horizons 2. It was super popular when it first came out. I bought full art foils and cookbooks and the whole shebang, so I have like a whole 100 count deck box full of just Asmo pieces, so I can kind of throw together whatever I want. However, nowadays it's not quite good enough with how the meta shifted. And I kind of just was looking through the MTG Goldfish meta breakdown, and Living End really just caught my eye. Ran a single league with it and went 4-1 and decided we're gonna lock it in.
Yeah, it's one of those decks that have always kind of been floating around there. Every once in a while, it would pop up during, like, I'd say 16, 17, 18. Kind of died off a little bit. Grave Hate got pretty big, and there are just better strategies out there. But, yeah, just like you said, with Modern Horizons and Modern Horizons 2, we got Crashing Footfalls, we got Shardless Agent, Force of Negation, just a lot more really powerful cards to make the deck more viable than what it was in the past.
Like, it comes down to when you're making a meta call for a big event like this, it comes down to what are you comfortable playing, what do you know how to play, and what do you think is going to be there. I noticed Living End was falling off a bit. Dredge wasn't really there at all. There wasn't graveyard decks, which other than, you know, you can think of like the Delirium decks, the Dragon Rage Channeler decks is graveyard decks kind of, but there wasn't any graveyard focused decks. So I figured something like that would be a good meta call. And day one, I ended up piloting the modern portion to a clean 4-0, which felt super sick. Day two didn't go so hot, but I finished day one 6-2. I think I was 20th going into day two. And then day two, I ran against a bunch of grinders and pro players, and I think it was nerves getting the best of me for the most part, especially during the standard portion, because this was my first invitational. This was honestly the highest competitive level event I had played in, so nerves are definitely a big factor in it. But all things considering, even just making day two, I was happy with, let alone finishing 4-0 in the modern portion and 6-2 overall day one. I was very happy with myself.
Yeah, that was it was really awesome getting updates from you, and yeah, we were all cheering you on, man.
Because the way it turned out was, me and Tyler was there with me. We ended up doing the math, and 4-4 would make it to day two, because it was a small invitational because of the pandemic and everything.
Right.
So once I started off standard 2-2, which standard is my weakest format by far. I was playing blue red turns, and I just don't like the format. So yeah. 2-2, I was content with. I was like, all right, I can 2-2 modern. I can easily. I trust my skills in this, especially with this deck. 1-0 modern, 2-0 modern. I was like, cool, I locked day two. This is awesome. And then it was just, hey, 3-0 modern, and we made the 4-0 list of modern people, which there wasn't a lot of. But it felt super awesome at that point, especially playing against a few decks running mainboard endurances. I ran into elementals twice, one with Yorion, one with Kahira.
Ooh.
And being able to beat both of those decks was awesome. I think my favorite moment of that entire tournament was playing against the first elementals opponent. He had endurance for two of my living ends, so they didn't do anything except wipe his board, and the third one was drawn. Kind of in a bad spot in game three. I had two shardless agents that dealt a total of 16 damage, and then a third one plus a subtlety to get in for lethal.
That's awesome. And that's one thing I really like with the addition of shardless agent, is it gives you a creature with cascade that you cannot ignore. You have to have an answer for it.
Exactly. My opponent, that he had told me, he kept a very hate heavy hand where he wasn't going to progress his board state very much to kind of stop me from doing anything, because hard casting creatures against them is all right, but when he's playing Fury and Solitude, the only one that's really going to stick around is the Striped Riverwinder. But him not drawing the cards he needed, and me being able to draw Shardless Agents over Violent Outbursts was great. I mean, I did draw the one Violent Outburst to squeeze in that extra damage the way he'd blocked with some flashed in endurances. It was a very complicated board state, and I felt I navigated it very well, so I was very proud of myself for that.
Nice. Now, how was the event with, like, I would say full-on COVID controls, right? This is obviously before the recent spike we've seen in cases and that, but you still had to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test within the past 72 hours, correct?
Correct. And honestly, all things considered, I very much enjoy most of the changes they made. My favorite being the distance between matches. I had plenty of elbow room, and every single person I was around or playing against fully agreed with me. I think that was everyone's biggest complaint about these large events, was it's very tight packed. This was a large convention hall. There was obviously plenty of room. This wasn't the largest event there's ever been, obviously, but there was still plenty of room for everyone who just wanted to watch, who just wanted to do other things, the command zone. Everyone was happy with how much space there was.
Yeah, that was always one of my biggest complaints, especially like you get into some stockier guys or just some built guys. I mean, it gets cramped, and you got playmats going over other playmats. Of course, the elbow space, you don't know where to put your deck box. You're trying to scoot out, and somebody else is scooting out at the same time, and it's a huge pain. And whenever I saw the photos of how much space there was, all I could think of was the must be nice, and had the boomer mentality of back in my day, if you couldn't smell the person next to you, were you really at a Magic event?
Yeah. The other thing I really thought was funny was, you know, Drake Sasser. I don't know if you'd consider him a grinder or just a pro player. I'd probably consider him pro player since he was at two SCG championships, or was it three?
I believe Drake has made three. I could be wrong on that one. But yeah, okay. I would definitely give him, I'd give him SCG pro player. And
yeah, I would definitely call him that.
Yeah.
I played against him in round four, so it was the last round of standard day one. First time meeting him, absolutely great dude. Loved all the interactions I had with him. Ended up winning game three, 2-1. And then day two in the first round of Modern, I got paired against them again. And that was the first time I'd ever been paired against the same person in the same tournament. I didn't realize that was a thing that could happen when you're doing multiple formats. I thought that was hilarious.
Nice. Did you also beat him in Modern?
I did not. He was on a Murktide, and he took me to game three. That was honestly one of the best matches of Modern up until game three. Game one, I knew what he was on. I was on the play. He was on the draw. I knew what he was on after his first turn. I played Spire Buff Canal Go, so he was expecting a mirror match. He had cast DRC and then a bobble and bobbled me, and what it turned out to be a forest, so he looked at it with a very shocked expression, and he said something along the lines of, like, what is this? I kind of laughed. I was like, I hope it's a good one. And then I cycled a Striped Riverwinder. He was like, oh, that makes more sense. And it was just a forest, but he was like, he thought it was on, like, Teemer Ragavan or something. But then the end of that game was me having a Violent Outburst as my go-off card with a full graveyard. He cast Expressive Iteration to tap out. I wasn't sure if he was on one, two, or none Force of Negations. So on, I had the mana to do it on his end step. He went to pass the turn, and, you know, we had been friendly up until this point, joking around and making comments. So I put my hand down and just stared into his eyes for a solid 30 seconds, and I could tell based on that he did not flinch, he barely blinked, no facial movements. He drew a counterspell of some sort. I just didn't know which one. I was not able to go off on his end step. I was tapped out, this was on my turn, on my main phase. I was debating then, did he draw counterspell or was it Force of Negation? He had the mana for Force of Negation on his turn anyway, so it came down to if he drew counterspell, he's going to blow me out, and if I do it on his turn. So I made the call to main phase Violent Outburst, hoping it wasn't Force of Negation, and I made the correct call. He then showed me the counterspell he drew, so that felt awesome to be able to read him like that.
Nice.
Game two, he saw the hate, enough hate to beat me down with a big Murktide. And going to game three, I was on a mult of five. And the hand was good, except for the fact that it was a one-lander, and my only land was the blue-black filter land, which is a one of in the deck, the only land that doesn't produce colored mana.
Ooh, yeah.
I think I had a Street Wraith as well, so I was like, all right, I get one draw to land, or I play this land and say go, and just didn't see another land for a few turns, and he ended up with enough lands out and a full grip, and I think it was a Ragavan or maybe it was a DRC with Delirium active, but I knew the writing was on the wall. I wasn't getting out of that one.
Gotcha.
Yeah, amazing player. He played absolutely super tight, very well.
Yeah, and I mean, also too, Murktide is one of the better decks you can choose to play, I would definitely say.
Yeah, Murktide's fantastic if you know how to pilot it, which he definitely did. I did not have the reps for it. If I had been playing it since the archetype had come out, I would have absolutely been on Murktide. But it is a hard deck to pilot.
Nice. That's awesome, though. Like, super great to hear more about paper events, because I know this is one of the biggest things that when we got started with the podcast was just bringing our experiences from paper events, what we saw, and you know, just trying to find an avenue to share that with other people so that they can see what it's like, because they may not have access to it based on where they live, West Coast, East Coast, or even overseas. Mm-hmm. As for me recently, super busy with work. I think we're finally going to be getting my submarine out to sea for the very first time in its life. So that's going to be like kind of cool. We'll go out for a couple days, come back for a day. Go out for about a week, come back, maybe go out a couple more days, finish up, and then fix everything that we found that's broken or we did break. That could take 2 weeks to 4 weeks, 2 months, who knows. And then we do a whole bunch of other stuff, and then we go into an extended maintenance period again, which could be between, they say, 3 months. The shortest submarine they've done was 1 year and 3 months, so it'll be a bit. During that time, I'm hoping to get some more modern time in because, well, hopefully things will be under control and we'll be able to get out and play more paper Magic.
Yeah, that's the goal for everyone, isn't it?
Yep. But some recent news here. The latest set for Magic the Gathering spoilers is coming out. We're going back to Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. Already it's looking great. We've seen it in the past with any like Asian inspired sets or art. It is phenomenal. And these basic lands, I think, are some of the best looking ones I've seen. I absolutely love it.
Fully agree. However, I think I am honestly most excited for the story on this one. Mm-hmm. Ever since War of the Spark, the Wanderer has always interested me because of how little we know about the Wanderer. And seeing, I believe it's a her, but it may be him, so I'm going to call them a they-them. I believe they have pretty much all but been officially confirmed in the set at this point. I believe they were in the art already, so I think it is just fully confirmed at this point, and I love that.
Yeah, some interesting things too we're getting. Ninjutsu's coming back. We even have, I would say, a pretty sweet new commander coming out, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce it. Satoru?
Yeah, I briefly saw that one. Read it off, Rob.
Satoru Umazawa is one of blue and a black. Legendary creature, human ninja. It's a 2/4, so, you know, good toughness, decent body. Whenever you activate a ninjutsu ability, look at the top three cards of your library, put one of them into your hand, and the rest on the bottom in any order. This ability triggers only once each turn. That's fine, because each creature in your hand now has ninjutsu for two, a blue and a black.
Everyone's a ninja, including Emrakul.
Yeah, I mean, you just think about a ninja Emrakul. It's like Beverly Hills Ninja coming back.
You don't need the cash trigger. You don't need the Annihilator trigger.
Yeah.
It's a 15-15.
That is just now hitting in the air, correct. Or whatever, you know, monstrous creature you got in your hand is able to slam face.
Exactly.
So that's cool. We got a saga here, the Kami War. It's one in Wooburg. It's non-legendary. The first saga is exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls. On phase two, you got return up to one other target non-land permanent. And it's, oh, dude, like the spoilers are wrinkled. Non-land permanent to its owner's hand, then each opponent discards a card. And last one is exile the saga, then return it to the battlefield, transformed under your control. It is a 6/6 flyer with trample. It is all colors, and whenever it attacks, defending player chooses a non-land card in your graveyard. Return that card to your hand, and this creature gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is the mana value of that card.
Yeah, I think that card's very cool. I don't think it's going to be modern playable.
No.
Maybe standard playable, but it's Wooburg, right?
Yeah, it's one in Wooburg.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be standard playable. However, I think it will 100% see play in a lot of mid-level commander pods, which is always great to see.
Yeah, I'm going to put that in 5-color Sisse Shrines. That's absolutely going in there. Just because it's goofy and it's fun and I like it.
There you go.
Magic the Gathering has announced they're doing a collaboration with Post Malone. It's not new news that Post Malone is a big Magic the Gathering player. There's been a lot about him out on social media and that, going to different stores, signing cards, sitting down and playing a commander game and that. And he's even done collaborations with the, I believe, the Command Zone, as well as the Professor with Talarian Academy.
Yeah, as well as a couple other channels as well, more recently. Yeah, he's a huge commander player. He's very, very good at the game, actually. Occasionally, I'll see some pictures of random players in different groups posting pictures of him at his LGS where they happen to run into him. I think that's awesome that he's just a casual FNM goer, and yep, he's Post Malone.
Exactly, yeah. But it's apparently to celebrate the return of FNM. There hasn't been too many details put out by the release from Wizards of the Coast on it, but it's also rumored to be about a year-long deal that Post Malone is going to be doing with this collaboration and the return to FNM. Who knows? Maybe we can get Post Malone on the Snapcast and we can have him chat about it a little bit.
That would be awesome. Yeah. I know there's been some kind of mixed reviews about this, most of them being the concern of, well, hey, they tried to do this celebrity event type thing with Mr. Beast, and that really wasn't it. But it's a lot different because Post Malone's a Magic player, and Post Malone's going to make sure they do this right. Mr. Beast, I don't think he is. I could be wrong. I don't think he's played Magic before this event.
Right.
I think this is going to go significantly better. I think having someone who actually knows the game and plays the game as a very large hobby of theirs is a great thing.
Exactly. No, I'm.
Yeah, he's established himself. I forget what collab I've seen him doing before. So, like, this isn't new to him, if that makes sense. Like, I'm trying to like put it in word. It's not just more than it almost seems like it's more than a hobby to him, you know, like it's something he truly enjoys. Cause I forget, what endeavor it is, but I've seen him like actively talking about Magic prior to this, collab deal being announced.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the big things I think Sean was getting at too, is this isn't just a grab at someone who's very well known in a whole bunch of different communities. This is an actual Magic the Gathering player who just so happens to be an outstanding music artist.
Yeah, extremely popular, especially now.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly here, Arena has released yet another Arena-only digital format called Alchemy, which is kind of neat. I'll give it that. Like, on the top of it, it seems pretty neat. It's its own format where they've gone through and reworked cards to make them either less powerful or more playable by reducing costs. One of the examples they had on the announcement page for it was for Wizard class, which the classes came out back in the Forgotten Realms set. They reduced the cost of level 3 to be the same as level 2, so the card could see more play. And yeah, it's neat. They're their own boosters you have to buy on Arena, only used in this Alchemy format. But again, I think it just draws a further divide between what is now Arena and traditional paper Magic. That's my only concern with it.
Yeah, I am not a fan of Alchemy, and I honestly think what is to blame is, believe it or not, Throne of Eldraine. I think this kind of talk of, oh, if only this was this cost or this did that instead, started with the notorious Oko Thief of Crowns, because how many people said his plus one should have been a minus one? He should have costed one more. He should have had less loyalty, because he did everything. Very strong Planeswalker, banned in almost every single format. Yeah, they could have done him better, but they didn't, and that's his Magic card, and he is banned in almost every format. So why are we talking about reworking cards now? They've never done that before. There was never a reason to. If something was too strong, it got banned. If something wasn't strong enough, it wasn't played. That's just how it's always been. We don't need every single card to be constructed playable.
Yeah, I think the first time we ever saw a changing of how a card was played was with the companions, right? Whenever they came out and said, oh no, the companion ability is sorcery speed only, and it costs 3.
Well, originally it wasn't even a companion ability. It was essentially as if the card in your sideboard was in your hand, which was egregiously broken. And yes, but making it cost 3 to put it in your hand at sorcery speed definitely makes it more balanced, but they weren't printed that way.
Yep.
So I think the best call would have been to just ban the companions or make them right the first time.
Yeah,
you can't just change a mechanic and be like, hey, this is how it's going now, especially when they're not even going to print any new versions of those companions with the correct wording on them.
Absolutely. And I want to say we've seen this a couple other times where they've had to do like kind of rules clarification on how an interaction works or things like that. But
rules clarifications are a bit different. Okay. This is just changing the mechanic. This isn't, because you can look up the way rulings are and how things interact. If someone's playing kitchen table with their buddy, which is the most popular format of Magic by far, and they look at this companion card and say, hey, this is what this card says, I'm not worried about the rules of, well, let me look up this card to make sure that I'm playing it correctly, because I'm doing exactly what it says. I'm putting it in my sideboard and casting it for its cost, as long as my conditions are met in my deck.
Yeah, and that was, I know, our biggest gripe with it. That, and, I mean, really, when it came to Ikoria, Lair of the Behemoths, like, companions were the only, like, true money cards out of that set. As soon as they eroded that, it killed the value of Ikoria. Like, you still had Shark Typhoon, you still have the Triomes, and I think there's a couple other cards that are still up there in, like, decent value.
Yeah, I mean, some of the companions are still widely playable. Lurrus is still an egregious card. It's just nowhere near as strong as it was, and the paper cards are not accurately depicted how they properly function.
Yep. But, yeah, so that's Alchemy. I think it's going to draw some confusion for players if they are playing this Alchemy set, because I believe Alchemy is an eternal format. It doesn't have a rotation.
Yeah, it's essentially the historic, what's replacing historic, essentially, where you're now going to have two versions of a card that you already own. So I logged in the other day, and I was given a ton of new cards that were all just essentially nerf versions or buff versions of cards I already own, and can no longer use the proper versions. For example, Alrun's Epiphany got changed from the way it's written to now its foretell cost is the same as its CMC, and you don't make the birds unless it was cast from foretell. It's not really that playable anymore, and especially in Alchemy, and I didn't get wild cards reimbursed. I just got the new versions of the card, so I can't put those cards that would have been wild cards into a new deck that I'd like to play. Instead, I'd have to spend more money.
Yeah, and then for those then following it, so the Alchemy set for Kamigawa Neon Dynasty will be out sometime in March. So what they're going to do is the set's going to release for standard play, and they're going to see how it interacts with standard in that, and what cards need to be rebalanced. And then they're going to go back, rebalance the cards, either for better or for worse, and then re-release them in this Alchemy set. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out there that enjoy it. I just hope it doesn't cause too much confusion or gripes and complaints if somebody goes from playing the Alchemy version of the cards and then they go to a local game store and they don't understand why the card looks or acts differently.
Yeah, and I'm not going to complain about digital-only mechanics, because I think they're neat, if anything. Yeah. They're not for me, but they are neat. People will definitely enjoy them.
Yeah,
I am going to complain about them just essentially nerfing or buffing cards, because this Magic the Gathering isn't a digital game. It's a card game. It's a trading card game. Making Arena have its own thing kind of strays away from Magic the Gathering portion of it, and I guess you could say, well, it's not really Magic the Gathering since it's Magic Arena and all this and that, but it just irks me the wrong way.
Yeah, that's, I think I'm gonna have to agree with you completely on that. What about you, Chris? What do you think of this changing of cards in the digital world?
I'm not a fan of it. I'm kind of on the path of either the card was too strong and it needs to get banned, or get the card right the first time is my deal. Like Rancor. Rancor was a card that was not supposed to make it through. It was actually supposed to be, I think, one more mana, but it made it through, and they determined it wasn't too powerful, but it was still not quite right, so it's still out there. And then you look, like, from, maybe not day to day, but I mean, we'll call it, like, quote-unquote season to season or month to month, you know, in this game, like, your cards could just disappear, and you're given what is a great version of a card for a complete deck, and then, you know, you come back to an unplayable version of the card in the moment, and no way to really rotate to the next deck you want to play now. So, I like, not just not a fan of it at all, really, to be honest. Like, either get it right the first time, deal with the consequences of your decisions, or ban the card out if it is that strong, is kind of the party I'm in.
And I've just got one more thing to add in there regarding the whole banning situation. I think players are definitely too quick to call for a ban nowadays. Look at when Modern Horizons 2 first came out. Urza Saga was on everyone's chopping block who wasn't really paying attention to anything because this card is so strong, look at everything it does, blah, 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 blah. Now there's no cry for Urza Saga to be banned. Instead, it shifted over to Ragavan. Ragavan's been doing good. Ragavan's definitely playable. People have adapted the meta. They've put more removal in their deck, more interaction in their decks. It's people are way too quick to cry for bans instead of trying to change things, and that's how every single meta should move. And if the meta physically can't move because a card is that strong, that's when ban talk should be considered, not because we're 1 month into a format and people don't like the top tier deck at the moment, because there will always be a best deck. That's just how games like this work.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm definitely in the same wheelhouse as you. And, you know, I may have even been one of the ones that was stating, you know, Urza Saga is a very powerful card. But, right, it's like there was the screams or the complaints of this is busted, how could Wizards do this or anything like that. It's just, it happens, you work through it. And either, you know, the bans are made or not. But I'm happy that they haven't really bowed too much to the loud voices out there to ban cards. They've I think they've done a really good job with kind of like, okay, yeah, we're listening to you, but we're not going to take action yet.
I think they've done an all right job. I think they can definitely, they've in the past, they've gone a little overboard with some of the bannings and then not fixed it by unbanning. My biggest gripe is them banning Oko and Mox Opal at the same time. Urza decks fall off of the face of the planet, and then not even considering Mox Opal coming back. Sure, it's definitely a strong card, and people have been complaining about it for a long time, but is it really too strong for today's day and age? They hit Field of the Dead, Mystic Sanctuary, and Uro all at once. Maybe we can look at one of them now that the other two are gone, since they were all played in the same deck.
Yeah, like, it would be interesting to see them try that and be more open to it. I mean, we saw Gregory Grave Troll come off the ban list. But then, I mean, they had, what, like, Prized Amalgam got printed. We had Creeping Chill get printed. And they're like, oh,
yeah,
okay,
they just
okay.
gave everything right afterwards to make Dredge Tier 1.
Right, yeah, they're like, all right, let's get Gregory Grave Troll back off. Because I think I saw Melissa Del Toro, I think it was streaming. And she went through, I think almost 30 cards, like turn two or something. Like, she was already more than halfway through her deck.
The whole thing about that was they banned Golgari Grave Troll after new cards got printed and made the deck tier zero. Dredges was after that and is still today even a very playable deck, if not still a tiered deck. It's always been good since. So that was the correct banning. They nerfed it down a bit, but still kept it playable. Unlike a lot of more recent changes they've done, like gutting multiple cards out of the same deck. For example, Oko and Urza, they were in the definitive tier one deck at the time, which was the Simic Urza builds or Sultai Urza builds, whoever your flavor was. And the problem was Oko all the way. So they banned Oko, but then they also got rid of Mox Opal because, yeah, I mean, why not get rid of both and see what happens? The deck fell off. Why not look at Opal again? Because Oko is obviously egregious. No reason to take that one off quite yet. Yeah. But Opal definitely could be looked at.
And, like, recently, too, wasn't there a no-ban modern event on Magic Online?
I don't remember when the last one was, but I do take a look at them whenever I see them posted, yeah. Like, posting the winning list and stuff.
Yeah, because I want to say, like, Alex and Jerry actually played a little bit of, like, some no-ban modern. And it would be interesting for them to utilize the Magic Online platform for testing the unbanning of cards.
Oh, yeah, there was a they pre-constructed some decks with one or a couple cards on the modern ban list, and they didn't really do a great job building all the decks. No offense to that team. They did phenomenally with the Hogak list. That list was by far the best deck that there was. Summerbloom Titan was really good, but again, could have been more updated. What else was there? There was Splinter Twin that definitely could have used some updates.
So it was eggs. Almost like what the deck was in its heyday.
Yeah, that's what they were trying to do, except for Oko. They put it in a random teamer good stuff, or like teamer mediocre stuff list. Like they tried to make Jund but teamer instead of putting it in like an Urza shell or any other shell that was playing it at the time. They just kind of made a brand new deck and it wasn't really playable.
Gotcha.
Just because Hogak was also the number one deck to be playing during that event because it was still a turn two deck. They kept everything in there except Bridge from Below. Then that deck, they gave you back Faithless Looting and Hogak, and it was still turn twoing just about everyone. I played that. I think it was my first time actually playing Hogak. Seen enough footage of it and played against it enough to know how it works.
Hogak was so fun.
I essentially played it for the first time to a 3-0-6-0 in that event against two other Hogak decks, and then I think I played against Eggs. That guy was quite salty. But yeah, like Hogak's obviously a problem. I would never want to see that card come back.
No, not in the least. There's too much to fuel it. It's way too easy.
KCI is essentially unplayable if Opal stays banned.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot they could look at on the ban list. That's a topic for another episode.
Oh, yeah. Some recent modern decks that have been doing well, though, because we do have some paper events that have occurred, is the Energy Championship Series has actually been holding events. We've had a couple modern trials, 20th of November and December 12th. The one in November was won by Robert Hayes playing four color elementals, beating Hammer. And in December 12th, Jacob Seagal ended up winning with, to my surprise, Soul Tie Infect, beating, again, Hammer in the finals. But this Soul Tie Infect list, this definitely threw me back because it was, I think 16 or 17 the last time Soul Tie Infect was actually doing well. And the reason that they go for black, for those who aren't sure why you would go black and Infect, it's for Phyrexian Crusader. It's a 2/2 with first strike that's pro white and pro red with Infect. So most of your removal, it's pointless. A lot of the decks out there right now can't block against it. And he did very well. Outstanding path in the finals that he had. And these were large events too that NRG normally runs. We're talking, 100, 200 players.
Yeah, and I mean, this is an absolutely amazing meta call, and a lot of people have been picking it up since, because look at the format right now. Your main sources of creature removal are Solitude, Unholy Heat, Fury, and Lightning Bolt, and it's protected from all of them. No one is, almost no one is playing black right now, which is going to be your next main way to remove it, being like Fatal Push, Assassin's Trophy, Abrupt Decay, stuff like that. It's not being played at the moment, so having this creature that essentially just gets around all the removal in the format currently is unreal.
Yeah, and then in the Soul Tie version 2, Jacob didn't pull any other Infect creatures, so he actually increased his count of Infect creatures from 12, normally Glistener Elf, Blighted Agent, and Ink Moth Nexus, and just threw in a full playset of Phyrexian Crusader. And I believe was running both Noble Hierarchs and Ignoble Hierarchs as well, just to get mana.
The mana, the actual mana base and the dorks in that deck are super clunky. I think that's going to be like the first step in optimizing that deck is fixing the mana.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to do since there are so many actual color costs in that deck with so many one drops. It's a very hard thing to do, and you can't play the Soul Tie Triumph because you're an Infect deck. You need to play things on every one of your turns and hope the game is over by turn three.
Yeah, and it's nice having the 16 creatures. I did two leagues with it. I 3-2'd both of them. So not outstanding, but, not terrible.
Yeah, it's been popping up a lot more, so people are becoming more prepared for it, to say.
Yeah, But like before, when you had 12 infect creatures in your deck, you were on instant mulligan if you didn't have an infect creature in your hand.
Because gosh, I remember the one event I played infect was with Once Upon a Time. Yes. I played it to 6-1 in a team open. First time playing it, last time playing it. It felt so good with Once Upon a Time.
Another card that was just a little too powerful.
Yeah, I mean, especially in a deck like that where you want an infect creature and you want lands, and if you see your opening hand and see one of the two, but you have a Once Upon a Hand, you snap keep it.
Yep. Some interesting notes from these events, though, and of course everything else. We've seen Black White Hammer really be the top deck. You see it on MTG Goldfish, but it represented more than 25% of the top 16 in the December event. Merfolk cracked the top 16, actually, which was a surprise for me. And then another deck that's actually making a comeback here is Yawgmoth Combo.
Yeah, Yawgmoth has been super good.
Yeah, being able to just utilize Undying Triggers, Zulaport Cutthroat, or Blood Artist to kill your opponent has been outstanding. Utilizing Yawgmoth's proliferate ability on Grist has also been phenomenal as well.
Yeah, Grist has been an absolute all-star in that deck. It's what makes the control matchup winnable.
Yep.
And not only winnable, but favored.
Yeah, and I think one of the best things about Grist was they put the text on it that it is a creature when it's in your deck and in your hand. So you're able to Court of Calling for it. You're able to Eldritch Evolution into it. And it's
technically, it's anywhere that's not on the battlefield, so that includes the stack. So if they, for some reason, you run into any negate type effect, they can't counter it.
Oh, nice.
Obviously, I don't know how many of those effects are being played right now, but does matter.
I could see negates coming in for this matchup because if you can't get your... Because with Eldritch Evolution, in addition to the cost of sacrificing the creature... So with that, you're kind of wasting on an Undying Trigger, and it's going to get countered. So that's, you know, I could see negates, but also I think just counter spells a lot better to have anyways.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays anyway. Yeah. It's a lot less corner case, but yeah, being a creature anywhere means you can tutor for it with any of your creature tutors. Hit off of Coco's the other big one that a lot of people are doing.
Yep. And then so we had Innistrad Crimson Vow released. And two of the big cards I've seen getting played a lot is Chandra, Dress to Kill, 3-drop Planeswalker that she has. Her uptick's one of the biggest ones that gets used here. Her plus one, the first plus one, I should say, add one red mana to your mana pool, and Chandra, Dress to Kill deals one damage to up to one target player or Planeswalker. That's key that it says up to one, because that doesn't mean you have to target anybody. So if there's a Leyline of Sanctity out and there's no Planeswalkers out, you can still get that one red mana. But
most importantly, you're using that to immediately play a Light Up the Stage.
Exactly. Being able to roll this into a Light Up the Stage is wonderful.
For a free Light Up the Stage, nonetheless, because it gives you the red mana for it while also triggering the mechanic.
Yep, and she's being played in decks alongside Ragavan. So if you can turn one Ragavan and it lives, you can play her on turn two, uptick, deal an additional damage, play a Light Up the Stage, show your Blood Moon, and then your opponent just hard concedes out of the entire match, even though it's only game one. That's what happened with me whenever I sleeve this deck up.
Yeah, it's a very fast deck. I think definitely a lot more to explore in it, but I think it's definitely going to become an actual meta deck once numbers are tuned and all that fun stuff.
Oh, yes. And then another one that's starting to see some play here is Cultivator Colossus.
And God, I love that card.
This is a 7-drop beast with trample. Its power and toughness is equal to the number of lands you control. This is being played in Amulet Titan. Surprise. Yes. But the biggest thing is its trigger. When it enters the battlefield, you may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. If you do, draw a card and repeat this process. One key thing to note, if you put a bounce land down, the bounce land trigger will not resolve.
Not until the full ability is finished resolving, at least. So one way that's relevant is if you have a Dryad of the Elysian Grove out, you play this bad boy, you're going to draw a lot of cards, especially in Amulet Titan where you're playing quite literally half of your deck is lands. Yep. You stick a Valakka at some point on there, a bunch of bounce lands. You now have a ton of Valakka triggers. Just make sure they resolve before you bounce all your lands back.
Yeah, actually, the list I'm looking at right here, they're up to 33 lands now.
Yeah, I've seen them play as many as 34, which is insane to me. But the main reason the Colossus is being played is kind of a solitude protection for Titan decks, because the way they win the game is with Valakka triggers and with a big Titan swinging in, and solitude can kind of stop both of those plans. With Colossus now, this thing is going to hit the battlefield and trigger, whether they solitude it or not. You're going to draw a bunch of cards and play a bunch of lands. You're going to draw more Titans, more Dryads, more Colossus even. This gives you a lot more game against solitude decks, specifically control.
Yeah. And with that, too, Cultivator Colossus. Also, it might not just be because of Modern, but it's driving a $20 price tag at the moment, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Mythic, and even if it is a standard legal set, it's a Mythic that's very playable in Commander as well as Modern.
Yep. All right, but I think that's all we got. Sean, Chris, you got anything else on Modern or just in general Magic?
I do want to touch briefly on how much Grixis Shadow has been coming back, especially as of recently, thanks to Corey Baumeister, I believe was the biggest finish with it before the huge spike in plays. He won the SCG Invitational with it. I believe he was completely undefeated in Modern, playing Grixis Dress Down Shadow. I think that deck is super tight and absolutely a contender for the best deck in the format. And then recently I've seen some lists playing almost the same list, but they cut Shadows to play more interaction or card advantage cards to turn it more into like Grixis control-ish. That's still super aggressive with Ragavans and Dragon Rage Channelers and Croxes and stuff without playing Shadow. And I think that whole Grixis aggro control type deck is absolutely a blast to play and extremely strong.
Yes. Actually, Grixis is it's the fourth deck, too, on MTG Top 8 for Modern metagame.
Yeah, everyone's been playing Shadow. But I do believe the list without Shadow are actually in a bit of a better spot right now, just because compared to the rest of the cards in the deck, Shadow doesn't do anything, especially on its own. It can be a big beater and it can close out a game, but there's a lot of interaction being played right now. So cutting Shadows for more interaction means your Ragavan and your Dragon Rage Channel and your Kroxa, they can finish a job for you as well, while being a bit more impactful on their own.
Yeah.
Especially early game.
Yeah, no, definitely. I really like where Modern is kind of evening out right now. It's going to be interesting to see what Kamigawa does whenever it released, what kind of impacts it's going to have. Because even though, right, we, like, especially in Standard, you see how it gets rocked. Modern, not so much sometimes. But every once in a while, there's that Standard set that comes out that will completely flip how this format is. But for the most part, though, just, again, stick with your deck, keep grinding, and you'll be able to do well with it wherever you take it. All right, well, that's going to do it for us. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please be sure, if you are ever in the Southeast Georgia area, check out our sponsors down at Deep Dive Games. Pop in, let them know that we said hello and that we sent you. And who knows, maybe they'll be nice and give you like a free water. Yes, Matt, I just signed you up for that. You can check us out on all social media as well as all podcast outlets. Chris, thank you very much for joining us. And Sean, thank you again for coming on board as well.
And my pleasure.
We'll definitely be sure to get another episode out here next month in January. But you guys have a good one.